Okay. So Daf Yomi yesterday was Kuf Zayin. And today is Kuf Chet. So we're going to do the bottom of Kuf Zayin Amud Bet and going into Kuf Chet. And there's a very, very famous sugya over here of science and Torah that we're going to concentrate on. Maybe we'll have some time for the popping blister sugya, but I don't think so. I don't think we're going to have much time for it. I think here we go. I'm going to make it bigger for everybody who's on the Zoom. That should do it. Okay, so we are in the middle of the Gemara. It says Hahorgan Chayav, which is like 6-7 lines down into the wide lines after the two dots. You see it? It says Ushar Shkatzim. This is actually Amud Bet of the beginning of the Perek of Shmona Shratzim. The Mishnah says that there are 8 Shratzim that you're going to be Chayav for killing them or for catching them on Shabbos. For catching them on Shabbos, or your pater from them. There's a whole discussion over there. And so the Gemara says, Hahargan Chayav. So it sounds like if you kill any of these any of these bugs, right, then you're going to be Chayav. So the Gemara says, wait a second though, Man Tana. Who is the Tana that says that you're going to be Chayav for this? Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Lazar he, the Tanya, Rabbi Lazar Omer, Ahoreg Kina b'Shabbat, Ahoreg Gamal b'Shabbat. If you kill a louse on Shabbat, it's like killing a Gamal. Now, what's the comparison over here? Clearly, the Gamal is not a special animal. It's just saying that a Gamal is a full-blown animal. It's obvious to everybody that if you kill a Gamal on Shabbos, then you're violating Shabbos. So too, if you kill a louse, you might think, oh, it's such a small animal, you might be putter. So, no. You're going to be chayav for killing a louse just as much as you are chayav for killing a camel. Now, why is this surprising? So, matkif la Rav Yosef. What's matkif? You guys remember what's matkif?
One level up.
No, that's metive. What's matkif? An attacking question based on logic. In other words, not based on a source. No source. So, Rav Yosef in Amora says, matkif la Rav Yosef. Ad kan ofligi rabban aladu Rav Eliezer alavikina. Dena para vareva. Rav Yosef objects to the idea that this must be Rabbi Eliezer. He says, no, it could be Rabbi, that's what Rabbi Yirmiyah said. It could be Rabbanan as well, because we know that there's a machloket between Rabbi Eliezer and the Rabbanan, but he says, but that machloket is talking about animals or creatures that are not para verava, right? Bikina de'ena paravarava, you're talking about a louse that doesn't reproduce. Okay, that are not doing pruervu. However, regular bugs, shkatim or amasim, de parin varavin, that normally reproduce, lo pligi. They agree that killing one of those bugs, everybody agrees, should be in violation of Shabbat. So Rav Yosef says,
how are we saying that a louse does not reproduce?
That's what he appears to be saying. They appear to be saying that there are lice that reproduce and there are lice that don't reproduce.
The lice, they lay eggs.
Sense. What?
It might be that they lay eggs.
Lice do lay eggs.
Well, laying eggs is also a reproduction. Chickens lay eggs.
Everything reproduces and everything lays eggs. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. But this seems to be the premise over here. That there's a distinction between bugs that reproduce and bugs that don't reproduce.
Can I ask another question, please?
Yeah, go ahead.
We're asking a question. How do you know it's with Rabbi Eliezer? Why does it matter to us whether it's according to Rabbi Eliezer or not, or somebody else?
Well, it matters for at least one reason, that we just created a machloket about whether or not there is... Netilas Neshama, that's what we're talking about over here, whether or not there's killing with regards to bugs on Shabbat. If it's only Rabbi Eliezer who says that you're Chayav, so then maybe the Rabbanan say that you're Pater even from killing a louse that does reproduce. Because maybe they argue across the board. But if we can say that this is even according to the Rabbanan, then the Rabbanan will at least agree that bugs that reproduce, you're Chayav for killing. That's why it matters.
Amen.
Why isn't animals' reproductive ability
Good. That's going to be the very next line, or maybe in two lines, in the Gemara. The Gemara says, "Velo pligi, pravi lo pligi, vishneim lo lamdua ela me'elin." Everybody learns the halachot of killing animals on Shabbat from rams, from elim, right? They all learn it from elim. Why? Because that's what was in the Mishkan. That is what was relevant in the Mishkan. Where did the halachot of Shabbat come from? They come from the Mishkan and what was done in the Mishkan. So one of the things that was done in the Mishkan was that they had to shecht animals in order to get their skins, in order to bring korbanot, etc., etc., etc. And so that was what they did. So one of the things they did was Elim. Why pick Elim, by the way? You know who's Pinchas? Why pick Elim? What did they use the Elim for?
For the covering on top of the Mishkan.
That's right. The Elim Ma'adamim, right? They took their skins and their red skins. They used them for the Yiriyot and for the curtains.
Sorry, Pinchas.
Were not Elim also wild in the Midbar? That's why.
I mean, maybe that's why they picked them. Maybe that was always a good thing to pick. So, Ke'elim ma'elim sheyesh behen netilat neshama, af kol sheyesh bo netilat neshama. So, basically, Rabbi Eliezer says, all we're interested in is whether or not you're killing. So, you could be killing an animal, you could be killing a camel, you could be killing an ayil, you could be killing a louse. It's all netilat neshama. But there are abundant sabri ke elim ma elim de parin veravin av kol de parav verava. Oh, they picked this trait of the ayil. Now, why did they pick this trait of the ayil, Usher? I can't say. I don't know. Except to say maybe that this is one of the main things that distinguishes an animal from, let's say, a plant. That animals get together to reproduce and plants don't. Maybe that's why. And amoebas don't. Maybe that's why. Amalei Abaye. So now Abaye comes in and he says, "V'kina ein par v'rava." Abaye, the voice of reason, right? He says, "What are you talking about? A louse doesn't reproduce." V'hamar mar, Yoshev Hakadosh Baruch Hu v'zan mikarnei reimim v'ad beitzei kinim. Hashem spends his day trying to make sure that there is food for karnei reim, for the reimim and the beitzei kinim. Now, what's beitzei kinim? The eggs of kinim. Now, what does this mean? That Hashem sustains the eggs of kinim? So Rashi says, I think it's Rashi. Yeah, Rashi says, "Beitzei kinim kasakodaytach kinim ktanim kishiyotzim mibeitzehen." It doesn't mean the eggs. It means the little lice that come out of the eggs. Mino de mikri beitzei kinim. So Gemara says, no. Beitzei kinim is the name of a species, a specific species of kinim, that does reproduce. But there are other species of kinim that don't reproduce. And that's what the Rabbi Eliezer is talking about, versus Rabbi Eliezer and the Rabbanan argue about. V'hatanya tfuyeyu beitzei kinim, a similar line, says we have something called beitzei kinim. The Gemara answers the same way. Minahu demikri beitzei kinim. V'harei parush de paravarava. Wait a second, though. There's a parush, which is, I think it's a flea. Parush is a flea. Right, the paravarava, the Tanya hatzad parosh b'Shabbat, Rabbi Eliezer mechayev, Rabbi Yoshua poter. We see that there's a separate machloket tonight between Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer is the mechayev again, Rabbi Yoshua is the poter, about whether or not you're chayev for killing a flea on Shabbat. Now, fleas definitely reproduce. There's no argument about that. So the Gemara says, Amar Avashi, seida aharega karamit. So he says, wait a second, we're not talking about killing in that Mishnah. We're talking about Sida.
Hunting.
Sida is hunting and trapping. Catching, right? So Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua have an argument about catching fleas. But they're not having an argument about killing fleas. Rabbi Yoshua doesn't say that you're putter if you kill a flea. He says you're putter if you catch a flea. Why? Ela demar savar davar she'ein mino nitzod chayav umar savar. Their argument over there is about whether or not we consider a species that doesn't normally get caught, whether we consider that to be tzeda when you catch it. People don't catch fleas. So if you catch a flea, did you violate tzeda? Okay, that's a halacha in tzeda, but it has nothing to do with nitilat neshama, which is hariga, or shochet, there's three different terms that you could use on Shabbat. That has nothing to do with actually killing.
But I assume Seder, why can't we do Seder on Shabbat? Because they trapped the Elim.
Yeah, certainly.
Shabbat. So in the same way that we learn from Elim when it comes to killing them, why would we not learn that same logic when it comes to trapping them?
It's a fair question. I think it's a fair question. The scope of every malacha is separate, but you're right that, you know, these are part of the same process, the process of creating, part of the process of creating the hides for the Mishkan. So you're making an excellent point. I don't have a good answer. In theory, you could have expected that the parameters of the halachos of tzad should be the same as the parameters of the halachos of
killing. A different animal than you could say.
Of killing.
You
couldn't, right.
Same animal.
But yeah, but that's okay. What the line says. That's what the Gemara means when it says, Seida ahariga karamit. You can't bring me a contradiction on killing based on trapping. Wow. The Gemara doesn't think that you have the same categories in both.
Rav Dadi?
Yeah.
It's Robbie. You know, there's a distinction between Seida and killing in that there are certain animals that ordinarily you trap, and there are certain animals that you don't ordinarily trap, and that's the distinction for Seida. But for killing, there's no such thing as animals that you ordinarily kill and animals that you don't ordinarily kill. Right? If a flea or a mosquito lands on you, you kill it. Either you're a hunter and you kill all sorts of animals, or you're not a hunter and you don't kill any animals. It's quite clearly there are some animals that most people would trap and farm and keep, and others that certainly you'd never trap and farm, fleas or
okay, but I guess you could say, well, you know, maybe animals that you don't trap also shouldn't be in violation of killing. When you kill them, maybe those things weren't, you know, relevant in the Mishkan. But I take your point. In other words, every single malacha has its own definition, and the subjects of that malacha could be different from the subjects in other malacha. That seems to be what's going on over here. Okay, let's continue a little bit more. Man tana, so the Gemara says, Hatzadon letzorech chayav. If you catch an animal for the sake of using the animal's hide, that's normally, you know, the reason that you catch it. So man tana, who's the one who says this? Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Rabbi Shimon hi damar melacha sheina tzricha legufa patur alea. Okay, so this takes us into a Shabbos-wide topic. This is a meta halachic topic of melacha sheina tzricha legufa, which I've given shir on, you know, in previous years, but it's been a while. So let's just go over the bare bones of melacha sheina tzricha legufa. So we all know that the malachos of Shabbos are based on what happened in the Mishkan. But it goes a little bit further than that. Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda have a machloket. When you have a malacha she'ena tzricha lagufa, which literally means a malacha which is not needed for itself, that's what it literally means. So Rabbi Yehuda says you're going to be chayev for that, and Rabbi Shimon says you're going to be pater for that. Now what is a malacha she'ena tzricha lagufa? So the most classic explanation for it is Tosa's explanation, which is a malacha that is not needed, that you do, but for a purpose other than the purpose that it was done for in the Mishkan. In other words, if in the Mishkan, let's use our example, they caught animals so that they could strip the hide from them and tan it and use it, right? So if you catch an animal for fun, for example, right? Or you catch an animal so that you can, I don't know, so that you can scare other animals off. Yeah. Who knows? So that's a malacha she'ena tzricha legufa. Okay? Other explanations for malacha she'ena tzricha legufa is if you don't need the object. So, for example, if you catch the animal, right, and then you let it go, let's say. Okay? Or you catch the animal and you kill it and you throw it in a ditch somewhere. Right, so that's malacha she'ena tzricha legufa according to that, because you aren't using the object of the malacha. We're not going to get into which one of these is correct, because we're not interested in that. But what we do need to know is that Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda argue about whether or not you should be chayav. So this Gemara is saying that since our Mishnah says hatzadan litzorach chayav, that if you trap for a need that you're chayav, that seems to be assuming that in order to be chayav, you have to do it. It has to be tzricha legufa. And who is that? Rabbi Shimon, because the implication is that you are tzadan shelo letzorech, you'd be pater. And that is if you're pater, that would be Rabbi Shimon, right? Rabbi Yehuda would disagree with that. Rabbi Yehuda would say you'd be chayiv even if it was not tzrich legufa. So the Gemara says, Ika the Matni La Aha. There is another Mishnah or Braita that they talk about with this is Hamapis Mursa Bishabat. Im La Sot La Pe, Chayav, Im La Hotzi Mimeni Lecha, Pator. What's Mapis Mursa? You guys know what Mapis Mursa is? No, no, no. So,
Popping the boil.
What was that?
Popping the boil.
Yeah, so when we were in yeshiva, we always said it's to pop a pimple, right? Oh, it's a pimple. But he's right. No, it's not. It's not popping a pimple. It's lancing a boil or popping a blister. That's what it is. There are different versions, whether it's shechin or but whether it's some kind of blister. Is it? Does it mean something like a lesion or something?
Like an open wound.
Yeah. Yeah, so here it's a closed wound that you lance in order to get the pus out. Okay, that's what's going on. You want to get the pus out, you want to finish it, you want to, because then it will heal. So you lance it in order to get the pus out. So hamapis morsa b'shabbat, im lasot lapeh, chayav. If the only reason you're doing it, okay, is to get the pus out, so you're chayav, sorry, if im lasot lapeh, if you're trying to make an opening so that you can put something in and take something out, I don't know what you're putting in, maybe medicine. So if you're doing it so that there's a teh, so that you can put something in, then you're chayav. However, im lahotzi men aleicha, if you're just trying to get the pus out, then you are patur. Huh.
You now, could be putting in air.
Okay, you'd be putting in air to let it disinfect or something? Okay.
To let it feel better.
Okay, fine. But if you're doing it just to get the pus out, you know, maybe you lance it and then you squeeze it or whatever, and you just get the pus out, so then you're going to be patur. Now, what malacha are we talking about over here when we talk about this?
Shchita?
No. Does Rashi say? I forget. Rashi says, okay, Rashi doesn't tell us, but in general, it's going to be either, this is going to sound strange, it's going to be either bone or makeh bepatish. Why? Because you're finishing the blister or the boil. You're finishing it.
You might finish it.
I mean that you're making it so that it gets to the state, you're repairing your skin, you're getting to a state where it's now going to heal. Okay. So in that sense, you're finishing it. I know it sounds strange, but that's how the Rishonim understand this. So the Gemara says, oh, and that's not the only one. Another one. Hatsad nachash b'shabbat imit asek bo shel ishchenu patur. What happens if you catch a snake? So if the reason you're catching the snake is so that it doesn't bite you, then guess what? You're patur. Im l'rufua chayav. If you're catching it so it doesn't bite you, what are you going to do with it afterwards? You're going to get rid of it. You're going to get rid of it. You're either going to kill it or you're going to throw it away. Right? But if you're catching it because you want to use the venom for healing purposes, right? So then you're going to be chayav because you want to use it. So the Gemara says, Man Tana. Which Tana is this? So you guys say, which Tana is it that says that you're only going to be chayav if you're doing it because you want the, you know, because you want it?
Rabbi Shimon?
Amar Yehuda, Amar Rav, Rabbi Shimon, Yehuda, Amar Malacha, Shein Tzrich Legufa, Patur Aleha. Right, because you're putter if you don't want the actual object of the malacha. Amar Shmuel, Hashola Dag Min Hayam. You know what? I think we're going to actually stop there in the Gemara. We could keep going, but we're going to stop there in the Gemara because we did the two subjects that I want to do. So we got through two things. Number one, the whole sugya of the lice. Okay, and we're going to get into that. So we're going to spend most of our night on science versus halacha issue. But then, if we have time, I hope we'll be able to swing back and talk a little bit about the Mapis Morsa, which is a huge, huge sugya that ranges all throughout Shabbos, but I don't know how much time we're going to have.
Why wouldn't the under shechita, you're drawing blood from
that? You're not drawing blood. It's pus.
There's going to be blood that comes out before. Pus is blood, right?
Is pus blood?
Pus is blood. It's the white blood. Is that right?
Oh, I don't know. But I think this is something topical. I don't think this is like, I don't think we're talking about a blister like a blister that I get from rubbing my skin against something. This is something that develops which is a skin boil. Disease. Yeah, it's going to have skin disease.
There's actually a YouTube.
Yes, there's Pimple Popper. I've seen that. There's also these apps that you can get on your phone that you can pop pimples. Yeah, it's crazy. I see that. It's like the chiropractic videos. Yeah. It's weird. Yeah. Okay, so let's keep going. So you guys can see my screen, yeah? So this is the source. You guys go over to the doc that I sent. It's called Torah Mul Mada. So with apologies.
They're both the same, right?
Yeah, they're both the same. With apologies to Rabbi Lam, instead of Torah Umada, we're going to go with Torah Mul Mada. I would have called it Torah versus Mada. So, the doc, right. Not the PDF. So, first, we're going to make things even worse. And we're going to cite a Mishnah in Masechet Chulin. The Mishnah says, Beitzat Asheret HaMerukemet Tahora Nikva Koshu Tmea Achbar Shechetzio Basar Vechetzio Adama. So there is a rodent that is half meat and half ground. It's made out of dust. Okay? This is a rodent that exists. So the Tosfos Yom Tov over here says, Achbar Shechetzio Basar Vechetzio Adama. Katav Arav, that's the Bartanura, Yesh Min Achbar Sheina Paravarava. He mentions, there's also, by the way, there's also a rodent that can that does not reproduce. It does what's called spontaneous generation. Loshon HaRambam. Now, you know, if you had these kinds of issues, who do you want to look for salvation? Right? You want to look to the Rambam to save you from these kinds of Gemaras and Chazals, right? That you know, they're making you feel uncomfortable about science. So you look to the Rambam, what is he going to, he's going to, you know, set the record straight for this rat that's made out of meat and dust. But you know where this is going, right? HaRoshon HaRambam Bahu Inyan Mufur Samaod Mispar LaRov HaMagidim LiYisharuza. Sorry, Mispar LaRov En Mispar LaRov HaMagidim LiYisharuza. Tons of people have told me that they've seen this creature. Afal B'Shemitziyat Baal HaChayim Kazeh Davar Matmiya. Even though this kind of creature is, you know, kind of amazing, V'lono Dabo Ta'ana B'Shum Pamin. I've never heard of anyone saying that it doesn't exist. And the Tosfos Yom Tov comments and says, "Zeh l'dati tana gedola al-mamine akadmut, b'gemara marbi l'midechtiv basar." Okay, fine. He says, "I think this is, you know, one of the greatest proofs of creation, because how could you have such a creature according to science? According to regular science, this is impossible. That you have a creature like this, but we do. So that's a proof of creation." So, that it doesn't exist. Yeah.
Not the
opposite? No. So, this is not the only place, but there are many places where Chazal describe things that seem to go against modern science. And how do we deal with this? And sometimes it really doesn't matter because they're just describing something, but sometimes it does matter. For example, Shulchan Aruch, right? Paro Shanikra Bargut V'Lashon Arav. I don't know what that is. Asul Sodo Elim Kenu Al B'Saro V'Okto. You're not allowed to trap it unless it's biting you. Then you're allowed to. Vasur lahargo, but you're not allowed to kill it. So you're allowed to send it away, you're allowed to catch it and release it, but you're not allowed to kill it. And you shouldn't crush it with your fingers. Rather, you know, pick it up gently with your hands. I don't know what kind of bug this is. Pick it up gently with your hands and you send it away. Aval, Shulchan Aruch continues, kina mutar laharga. A louse, you're allowed to kill on Shabbat. They're about to kill it.
Are they first life kind of things that are starting to run?
Crickets? Are you talking about crickets?
Whatever.
No, lice. These are lice like headlice. These are headlice. If your clothes are full of kinim, lo yahargem ala molalan, but yadov is arkan, avala mafla, sorry, mafla is a special kind of flea. Avala mafla brosho mutar lahargam. Says if you have this kind of other bug, a maflab is on your clothing, you shouldn't kill it. But if it's in your hair, on your head, then you're allowed to kill it. Okay. Now what's going on over here? So the Mishnah Berurah comments, it says Vasul Hargo. It's talking about the other bugs. Hatam de machalkinan bein parosh lakina, who the kom lachot de shabbat mi mishkan yalfinan lahen, the yalfinan mi mitat ko bale chayim lechiyuv, mishchitat elim adamim, sheyuv ha-mishkan. We learn the halachot of killing animals on Shabbat from the elim ha-adamim. V'aminan, ma elim ha-adamim sheparim v'ravim, af kol sheparim v'ravim. We only count things that reproduce. Lafuke kina, deina ba mizachar v'nekeva. So here the Mishnah Berurah at least made things a little bit clearer. And he said, we're talking about sexual reproduction between a male and a female. And he claims that the kina does not come from a male and a female. Elaba'a minha ze'a. It comes from sweat. That's where the kinim come from. Lo chashiva beria. Aval parosh. Af apisha gam hi eina paravarava. He says, the parosh also is not paravarava. Keva mikoma kam kemisha vayata minha afar yesh bachiyut ki ilu nivra mizachar nekeva. He says, this parosh, which also doesn't really come from a boy and a girl, it comes from the ground, says, it's still, that is at least a little bit more like a live animal. presumably because it comes from Mother Earth instead of coming from sweat. Presumably that's the reason.
Now in COVID, but everyone tried to wash their kids' hair. And
yeah. Like, guess what? Guess what? There's no point. There's no point. There's no point. Yeah. And he goes on, by the way, to quote the Rambam, who mentions that bugs that grow from fruit, okay, that come from fruit, they grow from fruit, there's an issur d'oraita to kill them. The mikri sheretz gomor, which is to say, and this is true, the Rambam has a separate mitzvah from other mitzvot of eating a sheretz that comes into existence from a fruit. In other words, a sheretz that comes out of a fruit, that was born from the fruit, there's a separate isur, a separate mitzvah d'oraita, a lo ta'aseh, to eat that sheretz apart from other sheretzim. That's a sheretz gamor. Well, that's what the Rambam wrote. The Rambam wrote that.
Does that mean that we could eat into that or eat into what?
Well, look, the truth is, that is one example where it doesn't matter. Everybody agrees that those shratim are usher to eat. I also agree that. He just believed that it was a separate isor, and he has it in his Taryag Mitzvot. So he dedicated a mitzvah to that. Yeah, well, he believes that there's such a thing, and that's what's referred to by the Torah. Specifically, in other words, the Torah went out of its way to prohibit a sheretz that comes out of an apple. That's how the Rambam understands. Now, as I said, it doesn't matter because everybody agrees that it's usher. But what does matter? The lice, that matters. Can you kill lice on Shabbat? Here, you know, we moderns want to be machmir.
Is that the only animal they saw that didn't come from Puravu or the other?
I don't think that there were any large animals that they said didn't come from Puravu, although he mentioned the achbar. He mentioned the rodent that he said also the same thing.
Right,
in general, spontaneous generation was something that medieval people believed in. Many. Medieval. That's where this is coming from, right? The science of the times, they believed in that, right? Now, how do we, though, in 2020, how do we respond to that? That's the question. Because the Shulchan Aruch, he writes that it's mutter. And the Chavetz Chaim, writing in the 20th century, he also is writing that it's mutter to kill lice on Shabbos. Now, was the Chavetz Chaim aware of what modern science had to that? Undoubtedly, and I'll show you why. I'll show you how I know that he was aware of it.
Did he still prefer to cling on to the teaching?
So let's find out why. Let's find out why I don't know if we're going to find out why the Chavetz Chaim did, but we'll see a few different approaches to how to handle this, ranging from we should change the halakha to we should not change the halakha, and here's why.
I mean, aren't there countless examples of this? I mean, even for example, yeah. Kashrut in glass versus China versus other,
Yeah, but I think you'll find that actually with glass specifically, at least Sephardi halacha really got it more right.
Or earthenware things that they smash, we still smash even though we can prove now scientifically that particles don't go in there more than
that's other. Not true. But that's not true.
So their science, they said there was correct Kashrut? There'd be no changes. There'd be no.
There may be new materials that we have that they didn't have.
And their understanding
that we've still been applying. Materials. Like, let's say, for example, I don't know. I don't have perfect examples. I have had an example in the past. But we probably have new materials that we've continued to apply the halachot to that maybe one day we won't because we'll find out that, these are fundamentally different than the materials that they used. But the claims that they made about their materials, I don't think anybody's ever claimed that they weren't accurate. Because really, the claims were based on their experience.
Sure, but they didn't have a microscope to...
They didn't need a microscope. When they said...
Know where the particles have gone into
they don't need a microscope because all they need to say is, okay, look, I have a meat pot, and every time I cook stuff in it, I can taste the meat.
This is touching on what your share last
that's all they needed.
On the genetically grown meat. What is it going to be touching?
Yeah, Yeah, although that's like a new issue. This is an old issue that many would claim that they got wrong. So the question is, what do we do if we come to the conclusion that Chazal based the halakha on a fact that was incorrect? this actually relates to what I talked about last night, which is a totally separate issue. Well, not a totally separate issue, but a different issue. Can Chazal be wrong? Can rabbis make mistakes, and what happens? But that's kind of what we're talking about right now, but specifically from the science perspective. And I have to say that the majority of Rishonim and Achronim, I'm not talking about, you know, really, really modern halachic works, but the majority of the Rishonim and Achronim that dealt with this issue tended towards keeping the original halacha. We have to figure out why. We'll see different explanations for why. And maybe we'll see at the end whether or not it's shifting.
Is that also the general theme that the earlier Achronim were more inclined to rely on the sources that they had, which were more Talmudic-based sources?
So let's see. We're going to see a few different approaches towards dealing with this question and whether or not it should change. And for many rabbis, they were trying to decide whether it should change or not. They weren't only trying to explain what had gone on in the past. They were trying to decide whether or not things should change. And I think you'll be surprised by some of the sources. In fact, I think you'll be most surprised by the first one that we're going to look at, because I think the rabbi that I'm going to quote, you would have expected to take a different approach than the one that he did. Let's take a
look. What makes this one different to most cases that we're used to is that generally modern science tries to find reasons why things should be more makil, right? Whereas here, the modern approach actually will be more machner. I don't think there's many examples of that.
Yes, I thought that was the ironic thing over here, is that the more modern you are in this case, the more machmir you're going to have to be, right? If you're more conservative about this, you end up actually killing lice on Shabbos. Whereas if you're a little bit more...
I always use the example of that is the example of Chodosh and Yoshon flour. The Chodosh and Yoshon flour to the four of the mitzvah by Rav Cook, and my vim in the anti-Zionist, but the super Haredi cousins, and now who wouldn't follow halachic ruling and Rav Cook are massively in favor of this Chodosh and Yoshon.
Well, I don't think that's fair to say that Rav Cook brought it into vogue. I mean, Sfaradim have always kept.
Right. So especially it became more modern Zionist rabbis to get on board in Chazal.
There's a reason for that. There's a reason for that, though. The reason is because the Ashkenazim tended to not worry as much about Chadash because they lived in lands distant from Eretz Israel. That's where it came from.
And the wheat cycle was
right. And because the wheat cycle didn't work out for us. Now the irony is that almost all grain in Israel comes from Chutz La'aretz. That's the irony. That while we grow most of our own fruit and everything, a lot of most of the wheat actually comes from Chutz La'aretz. That's the irony. So, anyways, let's take a look. So the first sefer is Shut Heichal Yitzchak. Anybody know who Shut Heichal Yitzchak is?
You showed us who it was.
Yitzchak Alevi Herzog. Okay. So this is from Herzog, the first chief rabbi. First chief rabbi of Israel and doctor, right?
Oh, was he a medical doctor?
He wasn't a medical doctor, but he had a doctorate, right? Rav Herzog had a doctorate, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, in purpleology. He was the one who did all the research into Tchelet to disprove the Rizuna Rebbe's Tchelet and all that. But he was a scientific-minded man, right? And what does he say?
The story goes, he learned English by reading the Talmud.
He was an autodidact, complete autodidact. He learned everything himself.
He learned English by reading the translation of something.
Really?
That's the story.
I don't know if that's true. I don't know, but he was a super genius. Apparently, completely self-taught. So, take a look. Im mutar b'shabbat la'osif chomer mashmid chaydakim l'toch kelim shecholvim b'ayam b'terem shechalvo k'dei limno hadstabrut chaydakim mazikim. Can you use, you know, antibacterial stuff on Shabbat? So, here, you know, he's talking about bacteria, which is different than what we're talking about, but look what he does with it. He says, Hasafek shitarer ve'evi li'adai ha'sheilahu, kanireh, ha'chashah shal isur netilat neshama. What are we concerned with here? The question of whether or not there is netilat neshama over here. Are you killing on Shabbat? Avlichor ein kan shum chashash. There's no worry. Ki arei mutar la'ro kina b'shabbat, ibnei she'ina para v'rabah. Kamavor b'sacha Shabbat.
Right, so
That's not how you get up Shabbat. Okay, so far he's just explaining things. Okay, let's continue. So take a look at the underlined part. And keep in mind, he is a scientist. Spontaneous generation. See, the truth is that his conclusion we can agree with, right? Everybody can agree that bacteria should not be subject to tinilat neshama. We may not be sure why, but we can all agree with that. So fine. But on the way, he mentioned the lice, and he affirmed the position of the Shulchan Aruch that it's mutter to kill lice on Shabbat. Now, what was his reason? How do you describe his reason?
Because Chazal said so.
It's
a halachic truth.
It's a halachic truth and not a scientific truth. In other words,
don't confuse me with science when I have a halacha.
He's saying, look, the science is true, and he says I agree with the science. I assume he says that I agree with the science, but the halacha was set down, and we're not in the business of changing the halacha when the science changes or when the science tells us that we got it wrong. That's not what we do. Fine, that's what he says. Who else? So Moshe seems to also take a similar position. Moshe says, he's actually talking about a bunch of different things over there. He's actually talking about trefot and certain types of trefot in animals. A trefa is a type of wound in an animal or a condition in an animal, which we're pretty much guaranteed that the animal is not going to survive. Okay? Now, halacha has a certain list of trefot. And what happens, though, if science says, you know what, this thing, not such a big deal. Animal can survive for years on that. So what happens now? So that's what Rav Moshe is talking about. But on the way, he mentions a bunch of different issues. He acknowledges the power of science. He mentions airplanes and telephones and all the things that we have nowadays. But then he says, Rambam was a very smart and a doctor. He knew that the truth was with the refuah. He knew that science was correct and medicine was correct. The Rambam went along with Hilchot Trefot because he said that's what the Torah requires. Now he does drop this line in there, which we'll get back to at a different point of Nishtane HaTeva. We'll get to. Hashem gave this as a halacha to Moshe Mitzrayim, and that's the end of the story. Hashem knows what's going to happen in the future. He knows that we're going to discover that these things maybe they have changed, or they may not be what we thought they were. Moshe says, I don't care what changes, it doesn't matter. If the halacha is the halacha, even if things change, we don't change the halacha.
Except you have an actual thing because it's Torah Moshe Mitzrayim. What does that mean?
He says, as long as something was given over by Hashem, then you can be sure that that's what it is. No, he's saying Hashem knew the science and he knew it was going to be in the future, but he decided these are the trefos.
It wasn't the Rabbanim that decided that the lice were
not para barava.
That they were, not permitted.
If you're making the point that Moshe might not agree with the lice argument, it's fair. Moshe wasn't talking about the lice over here. But on the other hand, if Rav Moshe is only making the point that once the halakha is established, we don't change it, then we don't change it. Now, this is called the Pachad Yitzchak. This is Rav Yitzchak Lampranti, who wrote, there used to be it was very in vogue. I think this is in the 18th century, I think. It was very in vogue to write these encyclopedia works. Right, so encyclopedia works where you described Torah alphabetically, and then on each entry you wrote entries, right? So there was Erech this, Erech that, and that's how you wrote your sefer. There was a whole Tkufa, where that's how everybody wrote. So this is, that's the Sefer Pachad Yitzchak. Later there was another Sefer called Pachad Yitzchak written by Rav Yitzchak Kuttner. Completely different. No, completely different. That's a work of Machshava and Musar and Ashkafa. Completely different. So this is Rav Yitzchak Lab Pranti, and he is writing about, this is, I think, Erech, I think it was a Kinim? No, Erech, oh, I wrote. Tzeda Asura. Okay. So here, he's actually writing a Shaila that someone wrote to him. Okay, so a person wrote to him a Shaila. Said, Perek Yudal of Mishnah Bet, Chaluk bin Parosh Lakina, Diza Asur Vizah Mutar. I'm just going to read part of this, so I'll kind of weave in and out. He says, Vani Atzair. This is the person writing to him. Hakotev, Ilav de Mistafina Amina de Bezmaninu Shachapmei Atodot, Hibitu V'ra'u V'yadu V'katvu D'kol Ba'alei Chai Yihiyah Mishe Yihiyah Hava Mina Beitzin. So look, the scientists have already discovered that everything comes from eggs. Maybe we shouldn't kill these animals anymore. We shouldn't kill lice or fleas. And says, if the rabbis hear what the scientists have to say, then they'll change their position like they did about the about astronomy. Right? There are several things that are mentioned. In Chazal, actually, there's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that says that the rabbis used to think that the earth, revolves around the sun in a certain way. Sorry, that the sun revolves around the earth in a certain way. But when the scientists told them that the earth revolves around the sun, they changed their minds. They took it. So the rabbis change their minds sometimes about science. Now he says.
But the question about the earth and the sun doesn't involve halacha, really.
You have to look in the Gemara over there. I think it did, but I don't remember how.
Abinutam.
Maybe. Now he goes. Now, so someone wrote this to this person who's writing to, this is Rabbi Eliezer Brill. I'm still on the right column, but I'm kind of in the middle. Basically, somebody wrote to this Rav Yehuda Brill, and now he's answering, and he says, no, we do not change. Look, scientists don't believe in Ein Hara. And the Ramban says, the halacha says that we do believe in Ein Hara. And that's enough. That's all. So he says, you know what? Maybe one day they'll change their mind back. That's his argument over here. He says, science, the scientists come up with an idea, and then 100 years later, they say, oh, you know what? We were wrong about that. Nobody can actually understand the way the world works. Nobody really knows. The only ones who have any clue on anything are the Chachamim. They can only see the outside. Now, actually, we agree, right? Scientists can only see the surface. That's the nature of science. You can only see what's going on in the outer layer and until they peel away another layer. So he says, scientists claim that everything comes from female and male reproduction. So look at these eggs. They come from the sweat. And Rashi says that there's a special species like this. Yeah, and he quotes the Rambam about the Akhbar.
So he's just flat out refusing.
So basically, he says, well, hold on. So that's not the Pachad Yitzchak. Okay, so up until now, we've been hearing from Rabbi Yehuda Eliezer Brill, who wrote this to the Pachad Yitzchak. And he wants to say, we don't change halakha because science changes. Halakha doesn't change. Science changes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Right. Well, that's not clear what that means, but yeah. So science changes back and forth. Now you go to the left side, the left column. That's actually the Pachad Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Lamparanti. I don't know if you can read it, but he says, "Ra'iti psak." He says, "I saw your psak ala kinim," and I said, "Yasher v'yasher, afagav de mineged l'svara mikol mikol kol ya'an ki lahachmir v'lo lahakel anan kaiminim bedaver ebein aposkim navoch umusupak hu im hapidukka hapidakukyu." I don't know what that is. Apolitzi mutar. These are different species that he's describing. We're not sure which one is which. Let me just find the important part. Here, the scientists have established that nothing comes from mold and nothing comes from sweat. They come from live animals that reproduce naturally. And we do agree with the scientists when they prove something. So we should agree with the scientists when they prove this. And he basically ends up saying, where is it? And he says, look, he says, and im bizmanenu ika v'ika chachmei umot ha'olam asovrim ki Copernicus, digalgal kavua, lo matu asovrim, right? Because the previous person had said, yeah, they've started to reject Copernicus. Right? So he says, if there are people like that, then, you know, we don't have to listen to them. Okay, basically, what Rabbi Yitzchak Lamparanti concludes is that, yes, we will change halakha. We will change halakha because the scientists have established that there is no such thing as spontaneous generation. So we will change the halakha. Just so you know, a little bit about the background of this, I did a little bit more research on this. This was common knowledge. In medieval times and pre-medieval times, to the degree that not only did people believe that lice grew from sweat and from the hair, when they found nits, right, which are the eggs of the lice, they said, oh, no, that is just the byproduct of copulation between lice. Okay, so they acknowledged that these lice actually get together and mate, but they said that the nit, which is what we think of as the egg, that's not where the next louse comes from. That's just the leftover stuff from their mating. This is what they wrote. This is not what we wrote as Jews. This is what everybody wrote. So they had so invested in spontaneous generation. They were so sure of it. They explained away the very thing that disproved spontaneous generation. Because obviously none of them had ever seen a louse come out of one of those nits. That must have been why. Okay? So here we have what I think are so far two explanations for why you would not say that science changes halakha. One is that even if the science is true, we don't change halakha because, as a policy, we just don't change halakha. There's halakha and there's science, and they're two separate realms. The second is that we don't trust science. Science changes back and forth. Why should we listen to scientists? Okay? And then you have the first vestige that we've seen so far of somebody who is willing to change, Rabbi Yitzchak Lamparanti. Let's keep going. So here we have the Michtam Eliyahu. Michtam Eliyahu is written, is generally, you know, is letters written by Rav Eliyahu Dessler. This happens to be from a footnote, which was not written by Rav Dessler, but it was written by his student, Rav Aryeh Carmel. But Rav Aryeh Carmel says he had a discussion with Rav Dessler about this. And he asked him what he thought. So he says, this is in number four over there, he says, Ra'iti l'rishon kan ma she'shamati b'perush shel ha'admor k'shenish'al al odot dinim achadim sh'atamim sh'netnu lahem einam l'fi ha'metziyut sh'netgala b'mechkar ha'tivi b'dorot ha'achronim. I asked him, what happens when the halachot don't jive with modern science? This is, you know, he's writing this in the 20th century, right? Rav Dessler lived in the late 20th century. The Gemara sometimes says, but we see that it's not that way. Okay, and he gives three different examples of this. He gives, we're not going to go into all the examples, but the last one is Mutter Laharog B'kina B'Shabbat. Mishum Shai Kina Yinafar V'Rava. So what are we going to do with this? So first of all, Rav Dessler says, we're not going to change the halakha. I'll tell you that right now. Okay, so with regards to whether or not we should just be machmir, he says no, we should not be machmir and disallow killing kinim on Shabbat. And he disagrees with the Pachad Yitzchak. Now, what's the reason? So on the bottom of the right column, he says vahatam amar admor ki atalacha yadu chazal bekabala midori dorot vegam yadu min anisayon l'mashal. Okay, so basically his first statement was the halacha we already knew. Okay, so we actually talked a little bit about this in our discussions with Torah Shabbat Peh on Sunday. The claim here is that the halakha was already known. And when Rav Yosef got up and said, oh, the reason for this halakha is that the kinim aren't para v'rava, that was just an explanation of the halakha. But the halakha was already known. And in fact, it's actually a subject of a machloket Beit Hillel and Shammai as well. And there's no explanation given. Rav Yosef is an Amora. Give any explanation for the machloket between Rabbi Eliezer and the rest of the Chachamim. Rabbi Eliezer didn't say this. He didn't say, kinim are not para v'rava. He never said that. Rav Yosef is giving that explanation. So Rav Dessler is going to say, over here, we're not going to read the whole thing, it's very long. Rav Dessler is going to say that there could be many reasons for this halacha. Rav Yosef was giving one reason. But ultimately, these two positions, and the position of the Rabbanan, to be mekil and to say that you're allowed to kill lice on Shabbat, that is the halacha. And it doesn't matter what the reason is, because that's the halacha. And even if we discover that what Rav Yosef said was wrong, that shouldn't take away anything from the actual halacha, because there could have been another reason for the halacha that we're just not aware of. And so he says, no matter what science comes up with in almost every area, it won't matter. Not because science is wrong, but because the halakha may be based on other factors that we're not aware of.
But there are no cases, other cases that you can't say that. The rule itself.
So I'll give you another example where something like this comes up. Okay? And this is actually getting to the heart of Dine Darabanan. Here is a Daraita, but Dine Darabanan. So what happens when the rabbis give an explanation for their Dine Darabanan? So for example, Refu'ah is Asur on Shabbat. You're not allowed to take medicine on Shabbat. Okay? Technically. Not allowed to take medicine on Shabbat unless you're very, very, very sick. What's the reason you're not allowed to take medicine on Shabbat? What's the, Robbie, what's the reason you're not allowed to take medicine on Shabbat?
You don't crush the medicines.
That's right, tochein. Because the way they used to make medicine was that they would crush herbs into medicine. That's how they made it. Now, if you're very sick, so then, of course, you should crush herbs and take the medicine because you're going to die. But if you're not, you just have a bad headache. So you have a bad headache, but you're not going to die. So does that justify crushing medicine? No. But the concern was that you may have had such a headache that you're going to forget that you're not allowed to crush the medicine. So there was a blanket isur on taking medicine under any circumstances. Now, what do we do nowadays? After all, unless you're a big homeopath, nobody crushes medicine anymore. We just go into the medicine cabinet, we open a bottle of Tylenol or Akamol or Advil or whatever, and you just pop it in your mouth. There's no malacha involved. So what do? So generally speaking, the poskim have said that the Yisur is still in the books, but we're much more makel about it. When generally speaking, when you ask a rabbi whether or not you had to take medicine on Shabbos, 9 times out of 10 the answer is yes. Because we're generally makel, but the Yisur is still on the books, still exists, and we consider it asur. And I once heard an explanation, I forget who it was, I don't know if it was Rav Tendler or Shachter, I can't remember exactly, who said, you know what? Maybe the reason is because maybe you're not going to come to grind on Shabbat. But there are many other ways to violate Shabbat while taking medicine. For example, let's say you have a new bottle of Tylenol, right? And on the bottle of Tylenol, there's still that little ring around it, that in order to open it, it requires you to peel along the perforated edge. And many poskim say you're not allowed to do that on Shabbat. But you know what? You have a headache. And so what do? You rip it open. There could be other cases also where, you know, you lose your head and you just do it. So the understanding that you're not allowed to take medicine on Shabbat might be more broad than just tochein. It could be other melachot that you're not allowed, that we're worried that you're going to do. So even though the local reason that was mentioned has disappeared, it could be that halacha still exists. Now, this is a big sugya. It has to do with also with banging on Shabbat and dancing on Shabbat. There's a lot of things that are a lot of moving parts over here. So it's really complicated. But Rav Dessler's main argument over here is that we're not going to change halacha because of science, because the real reasons behind the halacha may be different than the explicit reason that we have in our hands. And the science may not matter. It could be another reason why you're allowed to kill them on Shabbat. Okay.
Difficult to argue with.
Okay, that's Rav Dessler's argument over here. Now, there is another, there are a few other arguments. One is the Aruch HaShulchan. This is a famous Aruch HaShulchan that's used in many places. This we did use for the cultured meat, the genetically engineered meat. This is Aruch HaShulchan, where I'm not going to read the whole thing inside, where he says that, he was asked about drinking water, because he said now that they invented the microscope, they discovered that there's all kinds of things, swimming around in the water. They discovered all kinds of things that are in the water. And these things might be asur to eat, so maybe we shouldn't drink the water anymore. So he said, look, if you use a microscope, you can actually take a pocket of air and you can find all kinds of things in the air as well. Does that mean that you're not allowed to walk around with your mouth open? So he said, no, of course not. Rather, Torah is lo nitna l'malachei asharet. The only thing that's asur are things that are visible to the human eye. Okay, so that's the only thing that's asur, things that are visible to the human eye.
So, Moshe Feinstein also said that.
Yeah, everybody says that.
There's a similar tshuva.
Right, so everybody pretty much says the same thing. So maybe the argument could be made that, I don't know, maybe the argument can be made that lice are too small. So that generally speaking, nobody makes the argument that lice are too small because, look through the hair, they're generally, they're visible. But maybe we can make the argument that it's not the lice that are too small, but it's the eggs, the nits. The nits that are too small. To find the nit is really, really, really hard. You have to look really hard to find the nit. Sometimes my wife will show me, I didn't say that, never mind. Sometimes somebody will show me a nit in hair and I'll say, I don't see it, I don't know what you're talking about, right? It doesn't look like anything. It certainly doesn't look like an animal. It certainly doesn't look like a living being. If that's the case, then maybe one can make the argument that lice, since they come from the nit, the creation of the lice, right, Asher? In other words, it may be that the reproduction actually happened between a zachar and a keva, but the offshoot of the reproduction, the nit, is now something that halacha can't see, doesn't recognize it. And since it doesn't recognize it, it's as if the lice come from nothing. I've seen Rabbi Bleich make this argument, J. David Bleich, he made this argument. He says, that might be what they were thinking, that the nit is something that doesn't exist in halacha. And so in that sense, the louse comes from nothing.
But the nits are visible to the naked eye without a microscope.
They're visible to the naked eye under with a lot of effort. And maybe the halacha doesn't recognize that.
I don't think nits are actually visible to male eyes. I think nits are only visible to female eyes.
Rabbi said it's only visible to the female eye.
what about fleas? Or what about other animals which, they agree that it's poor involved, but we can also say bees. Like they're born in such.
What about bees? I don't know. How big is a bee egg? So that's an interesting point. There is something called parthenogenesis, which is from Jurassic Park, you probably know. Right? What happened in Jurassic Park? You guys remember? Yeah, no, that's how they made the first dinosaurs. They extracted the DNA. But you're Bikias in Jurassic Park. They filled Jurassic Park with dinosaurs, but weren't they worried that dinosaurs, there were going to be too many and then they were going to start, getting out of the park and everything? What did they do to fix that? What did they do to fix that?
They created only females.
They created only females, right? So that's what Dr. Henry Wu, he said, oh, don't worry about it. They made only females. But then what did Grant, what's his name, find?
Dr. Grant,
what did he find? He found eggshells.
Right.
He found eggshells and they found the pregnant ones. He said, that's impossible. How can it be? So he said they had grafted into the DNA, the dinosaur, I think frog DNA, and they had just discovered that some frogs can reproduce through parthenogenesis, which is asexual reproduction, that it impregnates itself. This is real. That exists. There are animals that that can reproduce asexually, and that's when the dinosaurs started to do Puravu on their own. So what do we say about that? That's an interesting question, isn't it?
Yeah.
So maybe, and maybe that's what they believe the lice were doing. Maybe.
Okay.
It's an interesting point to be made. So, but what I would say from the Aruch HaShulchan is
the
Aruch HaShulchan is making a separate point. He isn't even talking about lice. He's not even talking about lice. One could make the argument based on the Aruch HaShulchan that once you have a louse egg that's so small that it can't be seen, then maybe it's like the new lice are coming from nothing. Right. One could make that argument.
It's interesting that Aruch HaShulchan goes to that because he comes from a much more right?
Yeah. I mean, he was coming from a scientific argument.
No.
Of Yechiel Michael Epstein, father of the Torah Tamima, and the brother of the I think the Chutin of the Netziv. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Uncle, my uncle the Netziv. No, brother-in-law of the Netziv. Brother-in-law of the Netziv. I think the Netziv's mother's brother with the Netziv. Okay, anyways. So, last source that we're going to see that's Machmir, I think, is the Piskei Tshuvos, which is just a very modern sefer that collects a lot of different opinions. I'm not going to read the whole thing, there's a lot here. He says, he makes an interesting argument that I hadn't seen made before him. He says, I'm in the middle over here, he says, ki ein nikra ba mizachar v'nekeva elek shekol havayato b'yitzirato mitchila v'ad sof yachol yasot al yadam. I'm not even sure I totally understand his argument. He says it's only called born of a Zachar Nekeva when the entire process after the Zachar Nekeva get together basically happens on its own and natural. So how is that different? So he says over here with the Beitze Kenim, he says Beitze Kenim, Ein Shayach Sheitpatech V'Yetzei Me'em HaZachal Elim Ken Yitchamamu B'Toch Sarotav V'Chum Gufo Shabal Chai Acher. I didn't know that. Right, that's what I was thinking. Basically, he's making the argument that the louse will only come out of its egg because of the warmth of the body of the human. If you take it off the human and you just leave it out, it's never going to leave the egg. But as David said, I think you're right, right? Like you put an egg of a bird in the incubator because you want to make sure that it, and make it warm. That's why the mother sits on it, because then it will hatch. What will happen if it doesn't have that warmth? It won't hatch. The egg will the bird will not come out of the egg. Does anybody know?
You get free range eggs, which are.
But I assume they put them in some kind of heat.
Other than the male and the female, you need an extra unit as well, which is the human hair. Here we say a chicken doesn't need anything other than the male and female.
Oh, you're saying because it's still the.
Yeah, it's still.
I see. I see. Maybe.
I mean, spitting on the egg is not like the life.
Right.
On the hair.
Yeah.
Right.
Because hair is a.
It's the human that's providing the warmth. Maybe, but that's his argument. In other words, his argument is to say that science is correct and halakha is correct. We just didn't understand what paravarava means. Okay. So that's along the lines, also kind of like the Aruch HaShulchan. Like everybody's, you're right, and everything's okay. Okay? In other words, this is a reconciliation approach to show how science can be correct, halakha can be correct, and everything is fine. Different from Rav Herzog and Rav Moshe, different from Rav Dessler, okay? And different even from the Rav Brill in the Pachad Yitzchak. Now, what's interesting is that when we get down to it, so the Piskei Tshuva says that we can be makom, but, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot, there's also the Lubavitch Rebbe. Lubavitch Rebbe had stuff to say about this, but he basically took also the science doesn't change halakha, and also science changes all the time. So he was kind of a combination of them both.
He also had a PhD. He was
an engineer, though.
Engineer.
I don't know if he got a PhD. He studied. He got a master's. I don't know if he finished. But he studied in Berlin with the Rav.
Right.
We have a couple of sources here at the end that I want to get through. You have the Shevet HaKahati, who I don't know who that is, but he quotes the Chabos Yair, I mentioned the other day, the Chabos Yair was the one who argued with the Rambam. The Chabos Yair was Rav Yaakov Melissa. He's Rav Yair Bachrach. Rav Yair Bachrach, a 17th century Gadol, and he says, and his kitzer, that he says that, you know, the Chachmei Ateva say that the kinim do reproduce, and surely the rabbis knew about that. So he makes a different argument. This is a new argument, okay? This is a new argument that we haven't seen yet, which is the following, which is, you know what? You know, take this argument for what it will. Science only says the following. Science only says we have never seen in a lab or on video or anything like that spontaneous generation. That's all science says, and frankly, that's all science can say. What science cannot say is spontaneous generation is impossible and never has happened and never will. It can't say it because that's not science's business. That's not what science does. Science can only prove that things happen. That's it. That's all science can do. It can prove that things happen. It can't prove things don't happen. It could be that two options. It could be that things do spontaneously generate and we just haven't seen it. Or it could be that things used to spontaneously generate and they just don't anymore. And that's why we don't see it anymore. So that's the Nishtana Hatzvayim argument. This is that things used to work differently. And now they don't work like that anymore.
But the question,
why? Who knows?
The question still is open. So how does halakha deal with such a case? Do we therefore...
Good question. Good question. Presumably, the halakha should change for our kinim, right? So this is an interesting, I don't want to say anti-science, but at least a skeptical science argument, which would allow us to change the halakha because our kinim definitely reproduce. It's a good point. So in fact, he quotes Rav Yashiv is saying we should be machmir now, since we see that our lice do reproduce. So this is kind of a bridge between the two arguments. This is a bridge that says science is correct, it's not wrong. The halakha was correct, but situation has changed, not science, but situation has changed, and so we have to be machmir. And the Aruch HaShabbos, is Rav Rubin, is one of the major halachic Shabbos halachic works that is recognized even in the Haredi world. He basically rules with Rav Yashiv that we have to be machmir nowadays, except in extreme cases like a cholesh ein bo sakana, that for some reason you need to get rid of the nits, or a child that's really very much suffering. So he says there also you can kill the lice in that situation. But a regular case, a regular situation, the black letter halakha should be we don't kill kinim anymore. So that's a pretty big leap. You know, Rav Yashiv is taking all of everything that had been said, and he basically says, you know what? Nowadays we have to be lahalacha, we have to be machmir. Rav Melamed, I just saw that he has a harchava in his Pnini Halacha, and he says Hanira. He gives the entire rundown, by the way, very impressive. He gives like all the opinions, but then at the end he just says Hanira, shehakol lefi ha'yadua shalanu. We have to follow what we know. Shem yadu im yadu alanu sheinam parim v'rabim mutar lahorgam. Basically, Rav Yashiv says, look, if you find ones that are spontaneously generated, then you're allowed to kill them. But
we ask them.
Yes, we ask
we
them.
We ask them, how do you reproduce?
Yes, where do you come from? I just wanted to mention at the end, some of this just seems...
Does that mean if you're by the by, you're brushing your hair? Does that mean whatever, like my kids brushing their hair?
Right. You're not allowed to really brush your hair on Shabbat.
Right, that's true.
Unless you have these special Shabbos brushes that my kids have.
No.
That they claim don't pull out knots and also don't pull out the hair. But then what are you brushing for?
No, so that's when they're tying their hair. What they do is they tie their hair. and then they see nets.
Yeah.
At that point, then there's no problem with that.
So you could flick it off, but you can't kill it.
Right.
No, you can't kill it. I don't think you can kill lice.
Oh, okay.
Which malacca is combing your hair?
What?
Which malacca?
Well, you might be gozes. You might be pulling out your hair. That's most likely what's happening. But also, I mean, if there's not, I'm sure there's actually taking out a knot in your hair may not be a problem because you didn't tie that.
It's not tied, yeah, it's not.
Yeah, it's a different kind of knot. But it's mostly gozes.
There are areas where halacha has changed in answering the signs. A baby born in the eighth month, you were originally not allowed to be mechalel Shabbat to save his life, and that is not so anymore.
So that is an interesting example, but Rav Moshe kind of addresses that. Rav Pinchas says, originally, the halacha, black letter halacha, was a child born in the eighth month. You don't mechal Shabbos for it because it's not going to survive. So you're not going to be mechal Shabbos for it. But the reason for that change may not be because nature or science has changed, but more because medicine has changed. Or even because, you know what, our bodies have changed. That could also be why. But not because the science has changed. In those situations, but, you know, it reminds
me. It seems to me it's our awareness of the science. I don't know if we're splitting hairs on this, if you'll pardon the pun. Our awareness has changed. As far as Pinchas's example about the eighth month, for example, I think a baby in the eighth month does not have his bris on Shabbos. Correct me if I'm wrong, but a baby born in the seventh month is allowed to. That's the same basic principle that Pinchas was just referring to. I think it's our awareness of science, because they used to believe that an eight-month baby had less chance of surviving than a seven-month baby.
But I'm not sure that they were wrong. I mean, it could be that they were right. It was either they're right because they didn't have the medicine, or they were right because bodies have changed, which bodies have changed over time. Look, I'll give you an example. There is halacha about nida. There's a question when a woman is pregnant. And she has as a vesta. I forget the exact case, but the vestot of a woman that's pregnant, right? Which nowadays is basically impossible. You know, you don't menstruate when you're pregnant, right? So, but what, the rabbis didn't know that? There were halachot about this. Like, that's kind of like silly to believe that. Sometimes we want to attribute to them a little bit more primitiveness than makes sense, right? It could be that bodies have changed. That really could be. It's very, very possible that over time, environments change, so bodies may have changed. No, there are things about botany that the rabbis said that may be different nowadays. Do we really believe that the rabbis just didn't know? They were farmers. They were agriculturists. They knew these things. That's why they came up with them. It could be that things change sometimes.
Well, things change. Important things
change. Surely things have changed. Definitely things have changed. The thing with the lice is a little bit harder. But yeah.
I think I've done, thinking back to many, many years ago when it was still relevant, for babies, I seem to recall reading that there is some development of the lungs where the eighth month is more problematic or dangerous than either the seventh or the ninth. And today it's not such a big deal because there's the medicine that can deal with it with the problem.
Exactly.
But there is some development of the lungs that the eighth month is more problematic than either the seventh or the ninth. I seem to remember something like that. As I say, a long time ago.
Right. I just wanted to end, because I don't think we're going to get into Mappis Morsa. I find it strange that anybody should take the position that, you know, the rabbis couldn't have been wrong about these things, because they quote the Rambam about this, but the Rambam himself writes in his Mor Nebuchim, he says, "Do not ask me to reconcile everything that they stated from science with the actual reality, for the science of those days was deficient, and they did not speak out of tradition from the prophets regarding these matters." Meaning, how do we know that when Rav Yosef said what he said, he was basing it on some tradition? If he was basing it on modern his modern science, even the Rambam made mistakes about science, and even the Rambam acknowledged that things that he was saying were based on the science of his day. He writes that when he talks about astronomy and the halachot of Kiddush Rosh Chodesh. He says, look, I'm writing this based on what I know from the books that I've read.
Also part of it, never mind the science, but part of the point of being a halacha look at what's happening around it. It's a subjective. Halacha is a subjective living thing, so it's living with the times. So actually, things are changing. You have to live within.
So that's the argument, right? So, in other words, the first shita that we saw, Rav Moshe and Rav Herzog, so they argued that that may be true for some things, but once something is established as being halacha, we don't change it. That's it. We don't change it just because the signs changed. We're not going to. But you're right. There are maybe some that say, no, I mean, if the rabbis thought something, that was fine for them. But now that we have it corrected, why wouldn't we change the halacha? It's not as if, like you said, Asher, it's not as if it was halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai that lice can be killed on Shabbat, unless maybe it was. That's what Rav Dessler seems to be arguing, that maybe it was. But that's not the simplest way to read the Gemara. If it's not the simplest way to read the Gemara, then there's an opening to say that that we should change it. But there we go. I leave that to you guys.
Bottom line, if somebody has lice in his hair on Shabbat, are you allowed to kill him and take him out or
not? No, you're not. Shkoyach, everyone. Have a good night.
Shkoyach, Laila Tov. Thank you.